ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। हरे कृष्ण। My mouth is already dry out of anxiety. Like Arjuna was very scared before the war. Quite obviously, this is a very, very exalted subject, and I guess all of you can appreciate that I'm not qualified to say that anything more. Nonetheless, trying to be in the mood of a servant, I'd like to speak some words for my own purification on this very, very auspicious day. Sri Krishna himself is a very, very difficult person to understand. Probably he's the most misunderstood person in the whole creation. You know, Krishna's glories are so inconceivable to the ordinary man. In Manushanam Sahasraju seems to be a good ratio. But even far less probably understand Krishna, because he is, there's knowledge about him as Guhyam, not only Guhyam but Raja Guhyam. Unless there is a proper understanding from a parampara, it is difficult to approach the Lord. What to talk of his, like a, you know, a great man, like Prabhupada says, a great man is difficult to understand. He's so great. What to talk of, you know, his pleasure pastimes, what he's doing in his own personal private life, how more difficult it is to understand all those aspects of him. So Krishna is so great. He's Vibhu. And we are so anu, we are so very small. How can the fragmental portion of Krishna's creation, 1/10th of the hair, what intelligence we have, what realization we can have, what spirituality we can express, nothing. How is it possible for this anu to understand the Vibhu, the all great? If that is appreciated fairly enough, how much more difficult is Radharani to understand? She's practically impossible to appreciate. Therefore, we find that even for so many years, in Kali Yuga, she was not even worshipped. She was not even known. Her name was not even uttered. In the Madhva Sampradaya, from to whom we belong, we are Madhva descendants from Lord Brahma. In the Madhva Sampradaya, there is not even mention of Srimati Radharani, because it is a very, very esoteric subject. The initial seed of this Radha Tattva, this understanding, was first implanted in the heart of Madhendra Puri, who is our primary connection with the Madhva Sampradaya, and yet a Sampradaya which actually becomes more refined, becomes more specialized in its worship, but the incorporation of the element of the mood of conjugal ras. So this all starts from Madhendra Puri, who is the very root of the entire tree of the Chaitanya tree. And then it grows further, implanted into this disciple Ishvara Puri. And then Mahaprabhu Chaitanya comes in this world. What to talk of we understanding Radharani? Even Krishna cannot understand Radharani. So forget about our trying to understand her with our insignificant brains. The all-knowing, the all-cognizant, the one who knows everything, Vedam Samatitani, he knows everything. There is nothing unknown to the Lord. He is Abhigya and Swarat. He is Abhigya. He is all-knowing. Directly, indirectly, he is aware of everything. And yet Krishna admits, there is one thing which I don't know. That was the nature of Radharani's love. What is her pleasure she experiences when she sees me and serves me? And what is it within me which is so attractive to her? So for these three internal reasons, he has to come disguised as a devotee, carrying the mood of Srimati Radharani. So for us, worshipping Radharani is a very far call. She is inaccessible to all of us. But she becomes accessible to us in the form of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Today we are talking about her appearance day. There are various pastimes given about her appearance. Different kalpas, she appears in different ways, it is said. One pastime given is described by Purnamasi. Purnamasi is the actual one who organizes, is the organizer of Vrindavan pastimes. She's the organizer. And she related this pastime to Gargamuni's daughter, Gargi. It described that there was the king of the mountains, Vindhya Mountains, the king of Vindhya Mountains, became sort of, we can say, jealous of Himalaya mountain, because daughter of Himalaya was Parvati and his son-in-law was Mahadev, so powerful. So he desired to have a son-in-law just like Himalayas, but who would be greater than Mahadev. And who would be defeated, who could defeat Mahadev also in battle. So it is said Vindhya Mountains prayed for a long time to Lord Brahma from severe austerities. Brahma appeared and said that what do you want? He said, I want to have a daughter who will have a husband who will be able to defeat Mahadev in war and be greater than him. Brahma said, Tathastu. Okay, so be it. And he went away. So when he went back, he realized that he was confused. What did I say? So who can be greater than Mahadev? The only one who can defeat Mahadev in war is Krishna. And Krishna's eternal consort is Srimati Radharani. That means that Radharani has to be born as the daughter of Vindhya Mountain. But she is already the daughter of Kirtida. So how can she be born here? So he was a little confused. So Brahma had to solve his own problem by another set of meditation. He went to tapasya and he prayed to Srimati Radharani. Radharani was very kind. She said, I will come, fulfill this desire. So it is explained that this work was attributed to Yogamaya. At that time, Radharani and Chandravali were in this world, in the womb of Chandrabhanu and Kirtida, in the earthly pastimes. What was happening, it was as these two divine personalities came, similarly at Mathura, Krishna was also appearing at the same time. And you know, when Krishna appeared, first of all, he was transferred to Nandagam, to Gokul Mahavan. And the daughter, Yogamaya, was brought. The daughter of Yashodamai was brought here. And Kamsa became so anxious. She was so much harassed by this thought of the eighth child. So whoever was the child, male or female, he didn't care. He took this young girl, newborn infant girl. You know, she was not supposed to kill him according to the prophecy. He just smashed her. But she couldn't be smashed. She just rose into the sky. And she said that you are such a fool, Kamsa. The eighth child who will kill you is already born elsewhere. And you should know that you were killed by him in a previous life as well, when you are Kalanemi. But I'll tell you something more. She said, along with Krishna is also born, will be born tomorrow, eight Mahashaktis. Eight great, great, great goddesses. And the one who will marry them will be so powerful to become the emperor of the entire world. So he became so much more anxious, and he deputed Putana with this very devious, very, very devious plan, envious plan of killing all children born in that era, in that time. And she also was told to kidnap all the girls. So here, Yogamaya had transferred these two children, Radharani and Chandravali, into the womb of Mrs. Vindhya, the wife of Vindhya Mountain. She was bearing these two children. They were born, and there's a beautiful, nice samskara sacrifice going on. And Budhana was searching, scanning. Where are these two children born? She was scanning. Where are these Mahashaktis born? And she detected from mystical eyes that these two children are the ones. So as the samskara was going on, the sacrifice was going on, she grabbed these two children, these young girls, and flew into the sky and kidnapped. King Vindhya was so terrified. He told the Brahmanas, destroy this Rakshasi right now. So they started in mantras to disarm her and make her weak. So as she was flying, she became started feeling very weak. And she couldn't hold on to these two children. So she threw one child in the kingdom of Vidarbha. The king was Bhishmaka there, Vidarbha. And the second child she threw at where Rishbhanu was staying. So the first child was fetched. It said Jamban was there. Jamban also used to stay at very close to this place. And he was fetched to bring this child from Vidarbha. From Vidarbha. That child was Chandravali. And the other child was thrown was Srimati Radharani. And the child was, when she fell down, she was fetched by Purnamasi and given to Mukhara Devi. Mukhara Devi was told that this will be the daughter of your son-in-law. Son-in-law was Maharaj Vishvabhanu. So this is one pastime. Another pastime is given that Vishvabhanu Maharaj was not having any children and he used to perform many years of sacrifice, austerities. And when he was bathing in the Jamuna one day, he saw a beautiful thousand-petal lotus flower just coming towards him and touched him. His meditation was broken and he opened his eyes and he saw this beautiful, beautiful young child in this lotus flower. He was childless and he just accepted his child as his own daughter. He brought her home and gave it to his wife. It is said Narad Muni was traveling all over the world. He went to Golok Vrindavan and found that Golok Vrindavan, everything is very pale there. The pastimes are not having any color. There is no rasa there. So he was thinking that the Lord has gone to the material world. So he came to the material world and he found Krishna in the house of Nanda Maharaj. He was so happy to meet Nanda Maharaj and he described the glories of this beautiful child. And he thought in his heart of hearts that if Krishna is here, his eternal consort also must be around somewhere here. And desiring to have her darshan, he started visiting the house of every Brijbasi. He would be welcomed with great love and honor, with great respect, worshipped in everybody's Brijbasi's house. And he went on moving, finding out whether any daughter is born. But he couldn't find. At last, he came to the house of Rishabhanu Maharaj. He said, do you have any sons or daughters born? I have not visited you for a long time. He said, yes, this is my son. What is his name? His name is Sridhama. Oh, wonderful. He will be a great friend of Krishna. And they will play together and perform wonderful pastimes. And he blessed this child, Sridhama. And then he was about to leave. Rishabhanu Maharaj was thinking, maybe these Muni's blessings will help the situation. Said, Munivar, there is something else I want to tell you. This child, Sridhama, also has a younger sister. But unfortunately, she is born deaf, dumb and blind. Please bless her with your mercy. She goes to meet her. And when he sees this beautiful child in the cradle, he is so wonderstruck. He is so stunned in emotion. Becomes like a stone. He becomes totally unresponsive. He loses external sense of consciousness. And he starts comparing the beauty of this child with other beautiful children he has seen before. Beautiful personalities. He said, I have seen Mohini, the form of Vishnu. But that does not compare with this child. I have seen Parvati also. She is most beautiful. But this child is far beyond that. I have seen the goddesses of fortune. But they don't compare with this child. This must be the supreme goddess of fortune, Srimati Radharani. And so much erupting in emotion at that point, he started offering beautiful, beautiful prayers. Exalted prayers of devotion. Being satisfied, Srimati Radharani gave a beautiful, rare darshan to him of her Kaishori form. As soon as she was giving that darshan to Srimati Narad Muni, all the other Arsasakis also appeared there. And they bathed the lotus feet of Srimati Radharani with their own hands. And the water which was sanctified by her touch was offered to Narad Muni on his head. That form is very famous. That form is Narad Muni's, what she saw was very famous in the Vrindavan. So this is some of the pastimes of Srimati Radhani as far as her appearance. Of course, we know that there was an internal reason why she was not responding. She wasn't speaking, she wasn't seeing, as if she was not even hearing. She is so exclusively devoted to Krishna that absolutely she has no other interest in existence. She is so selfless, she is so exclusively devoted to Krishna that her existence has no meaning. All her senses, all her body, everything is exclusive for the Lord's pleasure. So there was no, she was in the material world, now in the world of matter. What was worthy of seeing here in this world of matter? What was worthy of speaking here? Krishna was not here. But as soon as Narada Muni started offering prayers and started glorifying Krishna, she became so much happy and she gave this form. We know that when Krishna and then Narada Muni said that they should have a nice function to, you know, celebrate. You are such a beautiful daughter. And then all the kings came and all the guests came. And then Krishna came along with Nanda Maharaj. And guests were being received. Everyone was very busy. And Krishna sneaked into the inner chambers where Radharani was sleeping in the cradle. And this beautiful pastime which we see depicted in this diorama took place. We just walked up to this cradle and then touched the cradle and then touched the hand, his hand to Sri Radhika. And the divine touch of Krishna's divine body, Srimati Radhani opened her eyes. And the first thing she saw was Krishna's beautiful, beautiful form. And she spoke, Krishna. And she heard Krishna's sound. This is her exclusive devotion to Krishna. Her form is molten gold. Whatever gold we see here is not pure gold. Becomes black. When ladies wear ornaments for a few years, becomes black. Molten gold. Gold which has been actually purified in fire thousands of times and becomes brilliant. That is the color of her body. Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe. Her body is so powerfully golden. Then when she is with Krishna, even Krishna's body becomes golden. And she walks through Vrindavan, all the creepers, the trees all get a golden hue just by her walk. She's so effulgent. It is said that she has the radiance of millions of moons. When Krishna comes to this world, he comes along with his dham. All the dhams are brought by the Lord. But there is one dham created by Srimati Radharani, not by Krishna. Everything is comes from Krishna. But there is something which comes from Srimati Radha. She is the origin of a place which is not made by Krishna. And that place is very special, obviously, because it's made by Radharani. You can imagine. Which is this place? That place is Sridham Mayapur. That place is Navadvip. It's a very special place. It is described, she is Vrindavaneshwari, but she also is a source of Navadvip. It described actually that the source of, we should talk about this today because it is a place created by Radharani, therefore it is very dear to her. This is a story told, the origin of Navadvip, created by Radharani, is told by Lord Shiva himself to Parvati in the Ananta Samhita. It is said that Sri Krishna was a supreme enjoyer, Rasaraj, who has a boundless desire to enjoy. That is his very nature. He is acting on his nature, and our nature is to serve Krishna. So we should act according to our nature. Everyone has to act according to his nature. So Krishna's nature is to enjoy. Lakshmi sahasrasa sambrama sevyamanam. There are so many Lakshmis serving Sri Krishna. One of them is a great gopi called Viraja. And she was serving Krishna with such love and devotion, pure and loyal devotion. Krishna was captivated by her, by selfless love. When she went to Radha, I understand that she, that my Lord is with Viraja. She runs up, she goes, she, it is said Radharani has got 630 million sakhis. Everything in the spiritual world is always inconceivable. So this figure should not disturb us. Because that's the spiritual world. It is not Lakshmi Sahasra, it is millions, it is Kotishu. 730 sakhis, these are her intimate sakhis. And she goes to this place. There's a description of Radharani's chariot. She doesn't walk on the floor, obviously. Even ordinary, when Prabhupada says, even when the, in Mullik Street, when Prabhupada was saying, even the ladies would never walk on the road. When they came out, they would always go in a palki. So women never walk like that, except in their house. So Radharani, she never walks like that. When she has to go and do for some official work, and she goes on a chariot. The chariot is even more inconceivable. The chariot is 100 yojanas tall. And 10 yojanas wide. Now that's a lot, right? Imagine a 100 yojan chariot. That distance Hanuman crossed from South India, Rameshwaram, to Sri Lanka. The 100 yojanas, that it took Hanuman some effort to, jump up the Mandara mountain and all that he had to do. So some effort was there, but Radharani's chariot itself is 100 yojanas. That description is given. 100,000 wheels to this chariot. When we see 16 wheels of the chariot of Jagannath, we say, oh, 16 chariots. this is wonderful. But Radharani's chariot got 100,000 wheels. Anyway, as soon as Radharani goes there, when Viraja finds out that Radharani is coming, and she is obviously a little bit angry and upset that I have held back Krishna with me. So Krishna disappears. Krishna gets scared of Radharani. Did you know that? Krishna gets scared. Death personified is fearful of Krishna. It is said the sun rises and sun gives light because it is scared of Krishna. The wind blows because it is scared of Krishna. And death himself is scared of Krishna. But Krishna is scared of? Why? Out of love. Krishna is scared also of Mother Yashoda. Not only scared of, he's scared of Mother Yashoda's stick. Now, one who can terrify death, how come he's getting scared of a stick? But that is the love of Radharani, that's the love of Mother Yashoda. These are beautiful emotions of the Lord. He gets scared of Radharani. And he disappears. Adrishya. And Viraja says, I cannot face Radharani also. She also, she changes her form. It becomes into a river. She turns into a river, Viraja River. Very special river. Covering Golok Vrindavan. Very special. Very wide, beautiful. It's not just water like flows, on an ordinary, what we find. Just, beautiless water just flowing like that passively. It is not like that. Everything is beautiful in the spiritual world. Ornament with lotuses, fragrance. And then Radhani was all the sakis and Krishna is not there and she's very upset. But she knows that I must do something to attract Krishna back to me. So she creates a beautiful place. She calls for Ganga and Yamuna and said, between both of you now, I will create a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful place which will attract Krishna, the Lord, to come here. With her own beautiful hands, her own beautiful heart, she designs this place to have beautiful groves, nice creepers of jasmine, mallika, malti flowers, and ornaments with such beautiful fragrances, and nice cuckoo birds who are singing Krishna's glories, and bumblebees are singing Krishna's glories, like that. Everything is Krishna Mai there. Everything is ever conscious of Krishna's presence. And then Radharani starts playing a flute. And she plays the flute. And Krishna's flute attracts Radharani. And now Radharani's flute is attracting Krishna. When she plays the flute, and Krishna is attracted to come. And understanding Radharani's desire, that she has made this place for me, for my pleasure, he becomes so much happy. A gift of love from Radharani to Krishna. So Krishna is happy with this gift. He said, this is very dear to me as well. And we will all both eternally reside here. And we will bless this place in such a way that anyone who comes here even once will be so purified and be able to serve us in our eternal mood of Radha and Krishna. So that's how Navadvip is so very pure. I also bless this place that all the dhams will just reside here. So for us, we must understand that Vrindavan is important to go, definitely. Just like Radha and Krishna are inaccessible, more or less in Kali Yuga, even Vrindavan is inaccessible, actually speaking. And we can see that Kali Yuga has successfully covered up Vrindavan so much that we can practically not even see Vrindavan in its original beauty anymore. Prabhupada says even when the Goswamis were there 500 years ago, the Kalpavriksha trees and beauty was so much untouched. But we can see only now so much of material things which eyes cannot penetrate. But for us to approach Sri Krishna, we must approach Krishna through Navadvip Dham. So that for Gaudiya Vaishnavas is even more worshipable than Vrindavan. All the dhams become weak in Kali Yuga, but Navadvip becomes even more and more powerful. So we approach Krishna through Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we approach Vrindavan through Navadvip. That should be our proper mood, proper aspiration as a sadhaka. In this, talking about the topics of Srimati Radharani's pastimes, we must understand that our sampradaya is very special. And every bona fide Gaudiya Vaishnava must be indoctrinated in the principles of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. So Gaudiya Vaishnavism is the sampradaya which actually upholds the worship of Radharani. We know Mahaprabhu Chaitanya has synthesized all the four sampradayas into one. The Gaudiya sampradaya has taken two specialities of each of the four sampradayas and synthesized into the Gaudiya sampradaya. Therefore, it is like a very special synthesis. A very special synthesis of all the four. In which the worship of Radharani is very, very high subject. So we can't go too deep into Radharani's special pastimes because they are very, very exalted. But every proud follower of the sampradaya, we are not proud of ourselves, but should be proud of the sampradaya we belong. And all these sampradaya acharyas are all great associates of Srimati Radharani. All our acharyas, they have come to glorify Vrindavan Dham, they have come to glorify Srimati Radharani, they have come to glorify Bhakti. Bhakti, Siddhansri Thakur was nine manjari. Right? All our previous acharyas, all of them are great gopis. So, there are five principles of the Gaudiya Sampradaya, which on today's special day we can try and understand. So rather than approaching Radharani in a very sentimental way, without our adhikar, it would be appropriate for us to understand what our Sampradaya stands for and get deeply indoctrinated in the principles which uphold the Sampradaya's sanctity. So the Sampradaya is based on five powerful principles. Aradhya Bhagavan Vrajeshatanayas Taddhama Vrindavanam ರಮ್ಯ ಕಾಚಿದುಪಾಸನಾ ಬ್ರಜವಧೂ ವರ್ಗೇನ ವಾ ಕಲ್ಪಿತ. ಶ್ರೀಮದ್ ಭಾಗವತಂ ಪ್ರಮಾಣಮಮಲಂ ಪ್ರೇಮ ಪುಮಾರ್ತೋ ಮಹಾನ್ ಶ್ರೀ ಚೈತನ್ಯ ಮಹಾಪ್ರಭುರ್ಮತಮಿದಂ ತತ್ರಾದರ ನಾಪರಃ. ದೀಸ್ ಆರ್ ದಿ ಫೈವ್ ಪ್ರಿನ್ಸಿಪಲ್ಸ್ ವಿಚ್ ಮೇಕ್ ಅವರ್ ಸಂಪ್ರದಾಯ ಸೋ ಗ್ರೇಟ್. And only when we have a very healthy approach to these, understand these principles, will we have a great understanding of what is the nature of Radharani. So, like there is an approach, like even in our medical subjects, there is an approach to a particular disease, we have a problem, we have approach. If the approach is proper, then you are likely to reach the results. If the approach is improper, then we may go astray. So those people who do not understand the proper approach can get contaminated by the mood of Sahajyaism. And that's so very common among religious followers of Radha Krishna worshippers. Because they don't have the adhikar and they try to jump into the intimate leelas of the Radha and Krishna. As we said in the beginning itself, even Krishna could understand Radharani. How come we can understand their pastimes? Unless they're revealed by the lips of a pure devotee. So, we will talk a few things about these five principles. And the more we deeply appreciate this, the more we try to understand this, the more our bhakti will become enriched. And only with that enriched heart of bhakti can we reach the exalted subjects. So the first subject is Aradhya Bhagavan Brajesha Tanayas. That the most worshipable personality is the son of Brajesh. Tanayas means son. Brajesh is Nanda Maharaj. So that is our very high understanding, very high platform of worship. We would worship only Sri Krishna. Prabhupada is sometimes appearing like, it may appear like sectarian, but he's not. But he said, we want to worship only Krishna and Vrindavan. That of course he's speaking from a very special mood. We worship Krishna in Dwarka and Mathura as well. But as far as the sweetness of Krishna goes, there is a very special flavor in worshipping Krishna and Vrindavan. What is that? Here is the Supreme Lord without any avaran of Aishwarya over him. When the Supreme Lord is in other places, he has a sort of an avaran. So the people can approach him, but they see there is a beautiful mood of Aishwarya there. Therefore, up to Vaikuntha planets, even up to Ayodhya Dham, there is so much of Aishwarya. It is not to feel that Aishwarya is lesser, is inferior. In our neophyteness, sometimes we think, oh, Aishwarya Bhav. Aishwarya Bhav. Aishwarya is, but we don't know what is Aishwarya Bhav. Can anyone compare the mood of devotion of Hanumanji Maharaj? He is worshipping Ram in Aishwarya. Is the mood of Hanuman any less than what we can, imagine? He's the supreme devotee in Dasya Bhav. So let's not carry an impression in our minds of Aishwarya or Vrindavan being so high and everything else being lower or inferior. There's nothing like inferior when it comes to spiritual subjects. That word inferior is not applicable in a world of non-duality. Higher and lower, superior, inferior, upper and lower, are all only words we use in this world of duality, of matter. But we only talk of perfect, more perfect, and most perfect. High, higher, and highest. So, we don't even understand properly what is Hanuman's mood of devotion in Aishwarya Bhav. How is serving Ram so fearlessly, he can go to any extent to do anything for his Lord. Now, who of us are like, thinking like we can do like Hanuman? Where we jump mountains to do something for the Lord? even want to jump on the first floor also. What if my bone gets broken? What if I get fractured? We will not even jump a first floor of a building to do something for the Lord. What to talk of jumping a huge mountain? So our devotion is at best very, very shallow, very small, very narrow, very insignificant. So when you talk of the absence of Aishwarya Bhav, we think, oh, it is inferior. No, it's not like that. Let us first try to understand Hanuman's mood of devotion before you go to the higher realms. Therefore, Ramayana is so much more relevant also to us. Ramayana is very important. Ramayana is not anything less. Ramayana shows the mood of Bharat Maharaj. What is the level of his devotion? What is the level of his selflessness? Let us try to understand those levels of devotion. What is the nature of selfless love of Bharat Maharaj? He was willing to do anything for Ram. Reject the kingdom of, you know, reject the throne and sit in a place lowered in the ground and take only cow urine and rice. Rice soaked in cow urine for worshipping his dear brother Ram. That is the mood of Bharat Maharaj. How high are these sentiments also? So, how can we say Ramayana is anything inferior? These are all pure, highly pure transcendental subjects. And great inspiration for all of us. Nonetheless, today we will talk about Vrindavan because today is we respect the day and we honor the day by talking about the subject today. So, the highest respectful personality is Krishna in Vrindavan. Why? Why is that? There is evidence for everything. There is praman. Everything has to have praman. The praman that Krishna is the highest in Vrindavan is that he has got no avaran of Aishwarya. It is the highest because he allows the very high level of intimacy. That's why it is the highest. Not because of any other reason. It is high because Krishna allows people, his devotees, to come very, very, very close to him. As you said, he allows Yashodamai to chastise him. He allows Sridharma Stotra Krishna to jump over him. On his back. He allows such intimacy to take place. And when there is intimacy, there is more sweetness. And therefore we want to worship Krishna in Vrindavan because he permits an increased level of sweetness with him, of relationship. Taddhama Vrindavanam. Vrindavan is the highest dham. There is so many dhams. Prayag, Rameshwaram. We have been to so many places with Radhana Swami has taken us. So many places all over the country. So many holy places in our country. Badrinath, Kedarnath, so many of them. All are very special places. But which highest is? Vrindavan Dham. Why? What is the praman for that? The small story about the very, very high nature of Vrindavan. I think it was the day of Akshaya Tritiya. And the Brijbasis wanted to go to Ganga, right? To take a holy dip there. He wanted to go to Ganga. And then all the preparations are going on in Nanda Maharaj's home. Everyone is going to, we're going to go to Akshetra. Prayag. He wanted to go to Prayag, sorry. Prayag Raj, king. See the king, our Sampradaya. Mountains have kings. Dhams have kings. Animals have kings. So there are kings of everything. It's not only kings among human beings. There are kings among dhams also. Because everything is ultimately a person. Ganga Devi is not water. Ganga Devi is a person. So the king of dham, king of rivers, like that. So king of dhams is Prayag. So if you hear the glories of Prayag, we'll say, oh, Prayag is so exotic. We hardly hear about them, you know, because... But if you were to hear the glories of Prayag, you'll be surprised. Oh, so much great Prayag is. So everyone going to do Prayag. Rivasis are, they want to go there. Okay, let's go. All preparations are going on. They're making all sukha prasad, dry prasad. Everyone is taking. So it will last you for a long time. You need to walk there. Krishna, where are you going? Where is everyone going? So we're going to Prayag. We're going to Prayag. Daddy, can we go tomorrow? Not today. We'll go tomorrow. Tomorrow is... So Krishna said something like that. And Krishna is so, whatever he does, Nanda Maharaj couldn't care less about going to Prayag. Ultimately, he wants to satisfy Krishna. So Krishna is saying, we'll go tomorrow. Well, while Ladla is saying go tomorrow, we'll go tomorrow. So what? Okay, as you wish. He surrendered to the Lord completely, his desire. So when he goes, there's a beautiful private swimming pool of Nanda Maharaj. He's a king. He's his own place to swim. His own lake. So he goes to take his bath the next day. And then he sees
Something very unusual. I may not remember the details of this pastime, but I heard it many years back from Adana Swami's lips. But he saw some beautiful goddesses there, wearing white sari, pristine, celestial beauty and purity. And they were there, and he's wondering, who's come to my pool? Someone has trespassed here. Who's taking a bath here? And then he saw a very funny sight also. He saw a person wearing a crown. He removed his crown. He went and took his bath in his lake. And then he went in the mud. And he rolled in the mud. And came back. Again he went to the water. Again he rolled in the mud. He says, what is happening? Who's this? I said, who are you? Where have you come from? Then she said, I'm Mother Ganga. Jamuna. And said, so who are you? I said, I'm Prayagraj. Prayagraj. Yes, I'm the king of all of the holy places. So we are coming to your place tomorrow. So he said, what are you doing here? I said, Nanda Maharaj, what can I tell you? So many people come to take a bath in Prayag. And they dump all their sins. This is the understanding mostly you're going to hear the holy river, right? There is no other higher purpose to going. Go there and dump all your... It's like a dustbin of sins. For most people, it's like that. You just dump your sins and come out and start all over again. So that's the Kunjara Sochava type of mentality which Prabhupada says we all have. And unless we are trained by proper understanding, where we don't just go for dumping our sins, we never go to Yamuna or Ganga for doing that. We go always to this place to get love of God. Dumping our sins is a very inferior type of aspiration. Very inferior type of aspiration to go to Holy Tirtha. Because they can offer much, much more than that. So say they all dump their sins in me. And I get so contaminated, so heavily loaded. So I have to come to purify myself. So every year, I come here and take a bath in your kund. Why? Because Krishna takes his bath here. And all the Brijbasis take their bath here. You take your bath here. So it is so pure. It is called as Pavan Sarovar. Pavan Sarovar. So even a bird flies from the sky, just above the Sarovar, it becomes purified. So then Nanda Maharaj realized there is no need to go to Prayag. Prayag is coming here. Why should I go to Prayag? In this way, Krishna revealed the glory of Vrindavan Dham. It is such a pure place. Taddhama Vrindavanam. Ramya Kaya. There are many other things also. We may not want to go and exceed my time. Ramya Kaya Dupasana Vraja Vadhu. That the highest modality of worship is that exhibited by the Gopis of Vrindavan. The mood of their worship. We are worshipping their mood. In worshipping them, we are worshipping their mood actually. The mood is very special. What is so special about the mood of the Gopis? Why? How is it different than other devotees' moods? There are so many devotees of Krishna, so many pure devotees of Krishna, so many pure devotees of Narayan, Vishnu, and they're all pure. But yet, there is something unique about the love and purity of the gopis, which makes them even higher than others. And what is that? There is a praman for that. What is the praman for that? The praman for that is this beautiful story of Krishna having an headache. This is a beautiful, sweet story. Krishna one day gets a headache. Krishna also gets headache. You and I get headache. He's a person. You should not forget, he's a Sachidananda body. But even a Sachidananda body also gets headache. It does not respond to crocin. Does not respond to painkillers. If it's an ordinary headache, like mundane, mortal, flesh, bone headache, you require a tablet like crocin. Crocin pain relief tablet. But Krishna's headache is not materially born. He's not worried about, oh, what a headache, my devotees are creating for me. No, not like that. His headache is very divine. Everything about the Lord is Janma Karma Chame Divyam. His headache also is Divyam. Huh? And through the headache, Krishna reveals beautiful esoteric principles of bhakti. Huh? So he tells, I think Narad Muni. Huh? So Narad Muni says, how can headache be you know, cured? What is the upay? Huh? What is the remedy for your headache? Amrutanjan, Jandu Balm. No. What will work? So only thing I think I tried. I said, this headache will not go like that. Narad Muni, you go and get the dust of the feet of my devotees. And that lape of the dust only will relieve my headache. So Narad Muni goes. And he meets so many devotees. Huh? I said, I want the dust of your feet. Dust of my feet? For what? Krishna has a headache and he wants to apply the dust of your feet on his head. Are baba baba baba. Imagine the shock anybody would get if something like this is asked by Narad Muni. What a shock. So what? Dust of my feet? Impossible. Huh? But everyone knows. How can you put your, it's like putting your dust on, on Krishna's head means putting your leg on Krishna's feet practically. So who will dare to keep his leg on Krishna's head? Krishna puts his lotus feet on everybody's head, on Bali Maharaj's head, and so many devotees, and on Kaliya's head, and sanctify his Tirthapad. Wherever he goes, he creates dhams. Krishna's feet are so pure. When Mahaprabhu Chaitanya was at Gaya, there's a temple of Krishna, Vishnu's lotus feet, Gadagraja temple, Gadadhara temple. And there is Vishnu's feet there. Actual Vishnu's footprints are there. Real, not carved. Real feet of the Lord are there when he had come to kill some demon there, Gayasura or somebody. And there are so many pastimes, so many revealed. The Brahmas are chanting so many glories of that feet. How exalted are Krishna's feet. How special they are. Before when we start darshan of the Lord, we never look at his face first. We always first look for a few seconds at least. And offer some prayers to his feet first. So after knowing, all the devotees know the glory of Krishna's feet. How can my feet go on his head? Excuse me, I'm really sorry. I'll go to hell for this, eternally. This is an offense which I can even imagine to perform in my dreams. So everyone respectfully says, Narad Muni, please excuse me, but not me. And Narad Muni just goes here and there, asking everybody. No, everyone is saying no. And we say, how will Krishna's headache be relieved like this? At last he reaches Vrindavan. And he tells the gopis what the problem is. Krishna's having a headache. Really? What should we do? So Krishna, the gopis are so much, they get nervous. They get so agitated with the fact that Krishna is having a headache. They cannot tolerate to see one drop of perspiration on Krishna's forehead. They become so much in anxiety. They are worried about Krishna getting a small thorn or a pebble hitting Krishna's feet. They are so much in love with him that they cannot tolerate that Krishna will get some small pebble in the wrong dimension piercing Krishna's soft feet. Instead, Krishna's feet are so soft. It is like when the new leaves are grown, you see a tender plant, just new leaves coming out, shoots. That's how they are soft. They can't tolerate the thought. Krishna having a headache, what should we do? He wants the dust of your feet. He wants the dust of our feet. Take it right now. And not just take dust, we'll give you gonies of that. They went into a big, dusty, muddy place and just stamped their feet there and said, take all this dust. And applied on Krishna's head. You know what you're doing? Do you know what you're saying? Do you know what punishment is there for doing this? You know the repercussions of what your activities are? You will have to go to hell for this. We are willing. Even if you have to go to hell for millions of births, if that can help to relieve Krishna's headache for 1 second, we are willing to pay this price. Only gopis can speak like this, and no one else in this world. Only gopis can speak like this. And there is no imitation. There is no imitation to this dialogue. That's how special they are. That's how special is the mood of their devotion. That's why even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is a great renunciant. There are many other pramanas also. What comes to my mind is Krishna is in Vrindavan and you know he exchanges his Madhurya Ras with his gopis where not even any sakhas are allowed. He's got eight principal sakhas. So most of the places are sakhas also of course there. But in special times like when he's having Rasa Leela for example, then even no sakhas are there. There's only one male allowed, that is Sri Krishna, the Supreme Purusha. Everyone else is Prakriti, Supreme Shaktiman, and all the Shaktis. So, when that pastime of Rasa Leela is going on, and no one else can enter that pastime. But obviously, it is not an ordinary pastime. There's nothing ordinary about this. And only, like when we have yellow glasses, we see everything yellow. When we have red glasses, we see everything red. So also when we have an eyes and a mind filled with lust, we only project our lust on Krishna's pastimes. And that's how this pastime has become so notoriously infamous and is duplicated by gross sinful materialists in the form of this Dandiya Ras. Like Prabhupada would say that Krishna performed this pastime of Rasa Leela when he was 8 years old. But when he was 7 years old, he lifted the Govardhan Hill. So if you want to imitate Krishna's Dandiya Ras, then first imitate Krishna's 7th year Leela. Lift a Govardhan Hill. Don't lift a Govardhan Hill. Lift a stone of 1 kilo on your tip of your finger. You can't do that also. So you cannot imitate. Krishna's Leela is very special. But the fact that it is a non-material pastime, is that even Mahadev, who is so pure, and even Narad Muni, who is so pure, wants to see this Leela. Obviously, it has to be something so special. So Mahadev, it is said, Shankar comes there and he takes a bath in Mansarovar. And then he gets the body of a gopi. And the gopi is having a female form, female mood. But with that, still with that, half crescentic moon on his forehead, on the side. So then with that, he enters and he holds a mashal to protect anybody from entering. So we can understand that this is actually such a high leela. And the gopis are worshipping him over there, Krishna. It's so special that even great Paramahamsa Vaishnavas want to participate. Srimad Bhagavatam, fourth principle of our sampradaya is Srimad Bhagavatam Pramanam Amalam. It is the highest scripture. And there are various pramanas for this, but most important praman is that after Vyasadeva having written all these various scriptures which he had written, was still feeling dissatisfied. At last he was instructed by Narad Muni to write a story, a beautiful pastime of Bhagavatam, where only unalloyed devotion is mentioned. And another praman could be that after Krishna and Radharani left for the spiritual world, the parrot stayed here. The parrot is called as Shuka. And feeling separation from the Lord, he wanted to hear their pastimes. And it is said he went to Kailash mountain to hear from Shivji as he was narrating the Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam is the eternal scripture. It was written by Vyasadev, but existed ever since time immemorial. So Shivji is narrating to Mother Parvati the glories of Krishna's activities. And his parrot is hearing. And Parvati is like sometimes we do when we are in a class. We sleep. Not sometimes, often, I would say. Sachidananda Maharaj always says this, you know. Krishna is so attractive. Sachidananda Maharaj in his very special style. So many people come to hear Krishna's pastimes. Also, Nidra Devi comes to hear Krishna's pastimes. If Nidra Devi comes to hear Krishna's pastimes, everyone is affected by that. Everyone goes to sleep. So yes, Mother Parvati is in a transcendental mood, but of course she also becomes sleepy and drowsy. And she's also sort of dozing off. And Shivji is, you know, absorbed. He's not looking at Nara Parvati when he's giving a class. He's so enraptured by speaking Srimad Bhagavatam. He's so much in ecstasy speaking Krishna's pastimes. And then to just make him go on, the audience has to, you know, give some reciprocation to the speaker, so for the speaker to feel it's worthy of speaking, you know. So then Shivji is speaking this pastime, and Shuka is there and said, So he just goes on doing that, and Parvati, parrots can imitate the voices. So he's just affirmating, doing in Parvati's voice, and he's saying, "Oh, my wife is hearing." So he goes on. And then when he opens his eyes, then he finds a bird is hearing this pastime of Krishna. It is said Bhagavatam is so exalted that anybody else, the adhikar is not there for anybody to hear this. Want to talk of Shudras hearing it, you know, when Shukadeva Maharaj was speaking this, you know, the great sages were there, renunciates, vairagis, yogis. Mahabhagavat was sitting and hearing. Narada Muni was there, Vasishtha, you know, all these great souls were there. How can a bird hear this? It is an aparad. So it's like knowledge, you know, being heard by some inferior person actually is a transgression. So Shivji is easily pleased and also easily angered. That's his nature, special nature. So he takes his trishul and he just flings it at this bird, Shuka, to kill it for having heard what he is not supposed to hear. So it gets destroyed along with him. But this bird is transcendental. It just flies zoop, 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 zoop everywhere. It goes here and there. And it goes to Badrikashram. Vyasdev is there. And there, Vyasdev's wife is also sleeping with his mouth open. Like we also sleep with our mouth open many times, you see. So then the taking shelter of this great mother, Vyasdev's wife is very special. So he enters the mouth of Vyasdev's wife. And then enters into her womb. She gets impregnated by this. So this is a special bird of Vrindavan. Not ordinary parrot like we see flying in the sky. A divine bird with divine consciousness and pure love for Radha and Krishna. Is one of those birds which has entered, and that was born as Shukadev Goswami. So Shukadev Goswami is fully conversant, fully cognizant, fully realized of the intimate pastimes of Vrindavan Dham. So when he's speaking Srimad Bhagavatam, there's all that coming out from his heart. But he never mentions the name of Srimati Radharani. Cannot. He just so much wants to say that name. But you can imagine that he's not saying it. It is explained that there are various reasons why he did not say. Her name is only indicated in an indirect way as Anyaradhita. Anyaradhita. Nunam. Because when you utter the name of your beloved whom you love so much, you can get deep spiritual emotions. And Shukadev Goswami has got such deep emotions for Srimati Radharani, being her worshipable goddess, his worshipable goddess. If he had spoken her name, he would go into deep ecstasy. And ecstasy usually lands up in its crescendo into state of being unconscious. And if he was unconscious, then the katha would have to end and 7 days would be over. And Parishmad is supposed to hear the entire narration of Krishna's pastimes. So he cannot afford to say her name. So he just keeps his emotions hidden in his heart and wholly indicates her name in an indirect manner. So when Shukadev Goswami is speaking, we should realize, we should understand, we should appreciate whether it is Dhruva's pastimes of 4th canto or Prahlad's pastimes in 7th canto, it is also pure. And unless we really appreciate the first canto and it's downward from down up, just like it is said, Krishna's form, the first and second canto of Bhagavatam is Krishna's lotus feet. And the face is the 10th canto. 11th canto is his forehead and the 12th canto is his scalp. So, Prabhupada wrote his first canto. And he empowered with such all his shakti, because he knew that he could leave this world prematurely when Krishna calls him. And therefore, he gave all that every sadhaka needs to know in the first canto itself, in the first three volumes of the first canto. Because it is Krishna's lotus feet. Krishna's lotus feet are as pure as his entire form. Our feet are, like when you amputate our leg, you know, we become incomplete. Huh? Suppose our legs get chopped off by a gangrenous process of diabetes or whatever else in an accident, then we're incomplete in our form. We have no legs. We have to put a Jaipur foot or something else to make it appear like a complete foot. We are incomplete. If a hand gets chopped off, you have to have a prosthesis which works like a hand but is not actually the hand. But Krishna's feet are as complete as him. Krishna's feet are Purna. So Prabhupada gave us this faith to understand that even the first canto, three volumes, are Purna. Everything we need to know is there in the first three volumes. But of course, Krishna came there more, and he stayed in this world till he finished the 14th chapter of the 10th canto, Brahma's Prayers, and then Prabhupada ascended to the spiritual sky. So that is our appreciation, that this is the highest scripture. There may be other scriptures like Anand Vindavan Champu and other great, you know, so many, Rupa Goswami has written so many, Ujjalin Lamani and all that. But they are just extensions of Srimad Bhagavatam. The basis of all the scriptures has to be Srimad Bhagavatam. And they only have made it even more like a condensed milk, added more milk and made it more sweeter. But the basis has to be Srimad Bhagavatam. It cannot be apart from Srimad Bhagavatam. So that's our primary scripture. Therefore, we are called as Bhagavad Dharma. Our entire process is not Hindu or Muslim. We are all followers of Bhagavad Dharma. So Bhagavad Dharma is, this Bhagavatam is Pramalamalam. Everything has to be supported by Srimad Bhagavatam. Every Gaudiya Vaishnava has to be dedicated to reading, understanding and serving Srimad Bhagavatam. Therefore, it is said, Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Every day, Prabhupada has installed this process. We have to appreciate that when we are hearing Bhagavatam every day, we may think, oh, Radharani, Radhashyam is very special. Yes, it is special. But the fact that we are hearing Bhagavatam every day from a qualified speaker in Parampara, that itself makes every day special. Because we are getting access to a scripture which is coming from a parrot of Vrindavan, from Shukadev Goswami. So every day is made special by Prabhupada in that 1 hour of recitation and hearing of Srimad Bhagavatam. And that should be the eagerness of every devotee. Nityam Bhagavata Sivaya. And by hearing that, what happens? Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki. And the last one is Prema Pumarto Mahan. The aspiration of all our activities is not, as I said, freedom from sin. It's a very inferior motivation for bhakti. People can do bhakti for various. The aspiration for liberation from sin by performing bhakti is called as karmakanda. Karmakanda is a type of bhakti. They also go to holy places. They also chant God's names. They also worship Narayan. They also worship Ekadashi. They do everything which we do. What's the difference between a bhakta and a karmakandi? It's the same activity practically, but with inferior motivation. It's either to get sin, redemption from sin, or for going for the heavenly planets, or getting Aishwarya, whatever, all these things. So it is bhakti with the inferior motivation is karmakanda. The same activity done with the aspiration for prema is shuddha bhakti. When it is, when we say it is anyabrisha shunyam jnana karmadi, and it becomes jnana karmadi anavritam, it becomes pure. When it is jnana karmadi mishra, it becomes karmakanda or jnana kanda, like that. So our aspiration for doing bhakti is only to get prema. Because prema is the natural quality of the soul. Our heart is actually a reservoir of love, which can be only offered to Krishna. And it's also a receptacle of love coming only from Sri Krishna. It is a reservoir and it is also a receptacle. The love which of our heart is to be offered to Krishna. Therefore, this word love, Prabhupada talks about this so many times when he talks on the Radhashtami day. He explains this word love very nicely. He said, love is not the type of love which you see on the posters and the billboards. That is nothing to do with love. Love is a pure term only to be applied in a pure relationship. When a relationship is selfless between two individuals, it is called as love. When there's any tinge of selfishness, it becomes as last. And every relationship of this world, of the material world, is not tinged, is loaded with lust. It's just loaded with lust. So this word of love is a misappropriation. It's a use of a wrong word in a wrong context. We can only use the word Krishnendriya Priti Vancha Dhare Prema Nam. That word Nam, Prema, that Nam, Prema is to be used only when there is Krishnendriya Priti Vancha. That when there is a desire to only please Krishna's senses, then it's called as Prema. When there is even some tinge to please ourselves, it loses that flavor of love, becomes lust. So that is our aspiration, only love. Therefore, it's called as the Panchama Purushartha. Generally, all pious people in India, especially, we find so much piety is dwindling, but it is there, still whatever is there. But even that piety was in the realm of Dharma, Artha, Kama and Moksha. You will find rarely a person performing, dharmic activities, spiritual activities, religious activities for the purpose of Prema. It is only in these Vaishnava Sampradayas, these four Sampradayas, is this aspiration inculcated in the sadhakas. And so we are very fortunate that we have been taught Prema Pumartho Mahan. Our aspiration is to get pure love. And who is the reservoir of that love? Radharani. Krishna is the source of everything in this world. And Radharani is the source of all love in this world. All love manifested by any devotee to whatever extent is coming from her. So we can't imagine what the nature of that love. We just think like that. What is the love of Hanuman for Lord Ram? What is the nature of that love? What is the extent of that love? Hanuman has an ocean of love for Lord Ram. What is Prahlad's love for Narsingha Dev? It's an ocean of love for Narsingha Dev. What is Bharat's love for Ram? What is Jatayu's love for Lord Ram? The hearts are oceans of love. Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha. Every pure Vaishnava is a Sindhu. Sindhu of love. So there are so many Sindhus, there are so many pure devotees. But all those Sindhus, unlimited love they have, are all coming from. So you put all those Sindhus together. The love of Prahlad. What is Prabhupada's love for Krishna? Boundless love. Shoreless love. No length, no breadth, no depth. That is Prabhupada's love for Krishna. All these oceans of love of all these great souls, they emanate from the ocean of love of Srimati Radharani. Therefore, she is the ocean of unlimited love. And therefore, we are hankering for what? We are hankering to get a small atomic fraction of that. And the only way to get that is to become the servant of the servant of the servant of her devoted servants. And there is no other way to get that. There is absolutely no access to that love except through her agents. It is not by sadhana bhakti that we can get that. Only depend on Kripa. Sadhana Bhakti falls short to access Radharani's mercy. Therefore, when you go to Barsana, this is very vivid in my mind and my heart. Whenever we are going to Barsana and we are standing there in front of Barsana, Shiji Mandir, Lali Lal is there. We are all standing there performing nice kirtan. And then when we heard this katha from Adhanath Swami, and he invariably talks about one concept to adopt in our heart, at least for that moment, for those few moments we are in that holy place. And that is the mood of being just a beggar. He just so strongly preaches that we have come here for what? We only have come here to beg Radharani. When we say we are a beggar, that means a beggar has got absolutely no qualification. Does a beggar have any qualification to get any donation from somebody? I've been standing for 10 hours. You should give me something over here. Can you just catch off somebody's collar and say, 10 minutes, I have to pay for it? ignorance. I'm standing here for 10 hours. I'm standing in this hot sun. You know, I'm not any food. Come on, give me at least 5 rupees here. Come on. Don't be so nirdai. A beggar has absolutely no qualification to get any naya paisa from anybody coming. There will be millions of people going back and forth. But he may not get anything. He only depends on the merciful glance of a potential donor who just has pity on him. Oh, looks like a poor fellow. And he just spoke and said, okay, take this. That's what we all are. We can only adopt this mood of being a beggar today. We have no qualification to Radharani's mercy. She is inaccessible. On other days, we don't approach her directly. We approach her through our spiritual masters, who are her divine confidential associates. And in following the instructions of the spiritual masters, we get her mercy. But on today's one day, we can, begging mercy from our Guru Maharaj, taking their permission from within our heart, approach her and beg. So today is a day for begging. Let us really get into the spirit of F.I. Bhaktivedanta Maharaj, is great Vaishnav. He just wrote a whole series. I mean, nobody could write a book like this. Can you have 6 volumes of a book on the title Beggar? Nobody in the world ever thought of writing a book with 6 books of 200 pages each with the title Beggar 1, Beggar 2, Beggar 3, Beggar 4, Beggar 5, Beggar 6. What a unique book. Beggar. That's his mood. He's teaching us. I'm quoting it, but I've not read it. But I can just imagine from this. I've read a few meditations of his in the first volume. Very powerful. But the book title itself shows us what is the mood of this great Vaishnav. He's just mood of begging from Krishna, from Radharani, from Krishna's devotees. So yes, let us be in this spirit of understanding the glory of Sri Krishna, the glory of Sri Vrindavan Dham, the exalted nature of Srimad Bhagavatam, the unparalleled devotion of the Braja Gopis of Vrindavan, and worship this mood of pure love. As Radha Maharaj often says, we are like that tiny bird who is flying into the sky. The sky is limitless in its extent. You cannot touch the sky, but the bird can only fly towards it and try to reach as high as it can. So we are like the tiny bird trying to understand this very exalted subject of Radharani's appearance day. But insignificant strength of realizations we have, we are trying to fly into the sky. And to whatever extent Krishna's mercy is upon us, we can appreciate. And it said Radharani's appearance is for two purposes. Radharani's existence is for two purposes. One is Radharani gives pleasure to Krishna. And second is she nourishes the life of the devotees. Poshana. The word uses poshana. Poshana is like this, you know, like you have this protein X powder or something, you know. it's a tonic, Revital or whatever. So many special tonics are there. So she nourishes the life, the devotional life of her devotees. So when we beg her, our bhakti gets nourished because bhakti is available only from her. Whatever opportunity we get to do to service, whether it is, you know, cutting, like Maharaj says, peeling a potato or being a security guard on a yatra or giving a lecture or playing mrudanga or just standing there with a torch in a yatra and say, okay, tell everybody this. When you know, in a yatra, he said, you tell everybody this, that this is this place. So you keep, that fellow keeps on repeating, you know, 1500 times to everybody. Hey, kya jagah hai, kya jagah hai? He said, this is called Surya Kund and this is Radharani's crown. This is Surya Kund, this is Radharani's crown. So he just poor fellow just stands with a torch there, just repeating that 100 times. Hey, Prabhuji, kya hai, kya hai? Kidhar hai, kidhar hai? So he just stands there. This is Surya Kund, this is Radharani's crown here. This is Surya Kund. He just repeats like a parrot. That is a service. Whatever service we get to do, is only by Radharani's mercy. So, I thank you all very much. I think gone way beyond my time. Shrimati Radharani ki jai. Radha Gopinath Bhagavan ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So, please be seated. The lectures are going to go on. And Gopinath Prabhu, who is the president of this temple, is inviting Govind Prabhu, another president, to come and speak. Yeah.